This is Cindy Gomez Shemp, and you're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Welcome to the premiere of our show, Breaking the Silence. And we are doing a special report today on rape culture. I am in studio with a bunch of KPPP staff and friends of the station. I'm going to go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves and talk about a little bit about why this topic is important to them.
Hi, I'm Annie Winter. I am an intern here at KPPP, and the reason why I wanted to have this discussion today is in light of some recent events, and I also started a petition concerning these events, which we'll talk about later, and hoping that we can all find some common ground and make some progress in fighting rape culture here in Fargo-Moorhead.
My name is Diane Miller. I am the new promoter of the Aquarium. I'm a local musician, well-known local musician. I'm a hip-hop rapper, blah, blah, blah. I am here because I want to address a lot of the concern that's going around about Dempsey staff not addressing what's going on between Chris Hennin. And I want, obviously, people to know that it's a safe place to be and that we are moving forward as positively and best we can.
My name is Darcy Jada Corbett. I am a graduate student at NDSU in psychological clinical science, local transgender advocate, and radio host here on KPPPLP 88.1 FM. And I'm also a two-time survivor of sexual assault. So this is an incredibly important topic to me because I have personally experienced this very tragic thing that happens to a lot of women, more women than it ought to, and men as well, but especially women. Mm-hmm. It disproportionately affects women.
It is an epidemic. I mean, it is the rape rate, even for college women, is 1 in 5. And the fact that we can't talk about this, the fact that every time that we hear of another rape or sexual assault or molestation in our community, that a hush falls over the entire community is very disturbing. First of all, I'd like to address the fact that what do we do as a community? What is it that first happens when we hear that rape or molestation or sexual assault has occurred in our community? Because there are a variety of different responses that I hear. And one of them, as a survivor of rape and sexual assault, so many times I cannot even count in my life, it is stunningly callous, cruel, painful, and re-traumatizing to me as a woman to have people say, you can't make any observations about what occurred. You can't talk about it now. You can't feel anger right now. You can't have an expression of pain right now because we don't know all the information. And you know what? Every person accused of a crime is innocent until proven guilty. So do you guys want to talk about that a little bit? Because that is one of my biggest pet peeves. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I definitely agree. And this is something that I see over and over and over again in my own work as an advocate. And that is, when a minority, be it a woman, be it a gender minority, be it a person of color, has anything to say about anything that's happened to them, people who are not part of that minority group immediately invalidate what happened. And they're like, well, we don't have all the facts. And the message that sends is that that person's word is valueless, that they could not possibly be telling the truth, that this person that we know couldn't possibly have done this horrible thing, when the statistics show that most rapes that occur within a friend group, within a family. You know, most likely you will know the person who sexually assaults you. But we don't believe people. We try to hush it up. We try to minimize it. The second thing we go to, which really makes me just nauseous, is that we immediately start analyzing the behavior of the victim. And I research, this is the area that I've started researching, is victim culpability bias. And that's where we just automatically assume that the victim is making it up or that they did something to cause this thing to happen to them. So for example, a person gets sexually assaulted. The first question that a lot of people ask is, well, what was she wearing? Or was she flirting? Or was she drunk? Or was, you know, was she sort of in a relationship? Was she a tease? We start to, like, pull apart her behavior, and we completely ignore the behavior of the assaulter. Now, I want to point out that men can also get sexually assaulted, and they're mm-hmm. often the silent victim of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. But I think in my conversation today, I'm going to refer to the victim as being female and the victimizer being male, because women are such disproportionately victimized. And in this specific case that we're referencing, it was a woman who was victimized by a man. So I'm going to mm-hmm. just...
Two women.
Thank you. Two women. So I just want to make that we know note. Of. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just want to make that point that I'm not trying to ignore the men that are sexually assaulted, but right. I do want to set that context.
Right. And, you know, rape culture is not, I know it probably doesn't even need to be said, but I think that we need to remember or remind the people that are listening that rape is not a crime of sex. It's not a crime of, like, a DUI that you got drunk and you did an oops. It's a crime of violence and a crime of oppression. It is a crime of control. So we have to stop thinking about the victim's promiscuity, her level of drunkenness, the clothes she was wearing, because none of those things are really relevant. And if you think about the recent rape cases that we have heard of that have outraged us as a nation, Brock Turner,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
these other college athletes, and we've had some here in our own town. There was a couple of hockey players in our town who not only raped, but videotaped their rape, and they were featured in the news wearing suits and ties, not their mugshots. They talked extensively about what great athletes they were and what a great future they had ahead of them. And to me, that is incredibly damaging for the victims to hear, to see, and for all victims of sexual assault. It's re-traumatizing, because what we are saying is that the value of the rapist's life and what will happen to him and any shame that that person can feel is much, much more important than the destroyed life of the victim of the rape. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about how you feel about that? We hear this over and over again, the validation of the life of the rapist. We spend so much time talking about how great their career was, the contributions they made to the community. They had a dog. They were nice to pets. You know, their neighbors like them. We humanize the rapist and we ignore the victims. We don't want to talk about the victims in any positive way or at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, here I kind of want to bring it back to the issue that brought us here today, of course, was Chris Hennen, and to kind of create a background mm-hmm. for people, for any listeners that may not know what happened. So Chris Hennen was the music promoter at the Aquarium, kind of ran the show up there, which is a bar, an upstairs bar in a local music venue. And he was also the news editor for the High Plains Reader, which is an arts and entertainment kind of advertisement sort of paper, but it really is also sort of a progressive alternative newspaper, no matter what they want to call themselves. They certainly do write pieces that mainstream news doesn't typically write, which would usually be appreciated. So here's this person, kind of beloved by everybody in the community, somebody who's really progressive, has a lot of pull, found out that he had sexually assaulted or raped, if you want to say, two women. The first occurred sometime in March or April of this year, 2016, and the other would have been in August, this past August. One of the victims came forward publicly on Facebook. This was a public post, and said on the 24th of August that just so you know whose bills you're paying when you go to the aquarium and when you go there in general, protect yourself, because Chris Hennen is a rapist. He sexually assaulted me. And she just wanted everyone to know that. And I won't name her out of respect. If she does want to, though, and contacts us later, we'll probably edit that in. The other victim is unnamed. And of course, we're going to respect that also. So after this happened, there was a lot of shock, mostly just shock, not as much outrage as I would have expected, especially after what happened with Brock Turner, because everybody, you know, had their pitchforks after that happened, right?
Right.
But for some reason, when it happened with Chris Hennen, people that I knew, because, I mean, we all personally knew this guy, for some reason, mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, yeah, innocent till proven guilty, you know, let's stop the witch hunt. And how inappropriate is that context?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those same people that said that they wanted these horrible things to happen to Brock Turner and that they couldn't believe that he got such a light sentence were all of a sudden singing a completely different tune, you know, like, oh, I know Chris, he's a good guy, he's a good friend. There's obviously some kind of mistake. If he did it, I'm sure that he'll get what's coming to him. And, you know, of course, I feel really bad for this girl, but we don't really know. You know, we need to let the judicial system do their job. And then after that, we can kind of make our decision as to whether or not we're upset with him.
I was just going to ask you, and feel free to chime in, Diane, because I, as a former editor at the High Plains Reader, I was very much involved in the music scene, if you want to call it that, and the stories that were coming out of the music scene. But both of you are actually musicians. Both of you have been part of that music world and knew much more intimately than I ever did Chris Hennen and probably a lot of the people that were rocked by this, that were shocked by this, that were affected by this. That has to be part of the dynamic of why this is such a difficult topic. The fact that everybody involved in that music world has been affected in some way or another. Can you speak to that a bit?
I guess I can quickly. I was in a band briefly, and we probably played maybe, I would say, 5 shows at the Aquarium. And I mean, I wasn't ever more than acquaintances with Chris, but it always felt a little strained, especially when I would see some of the things that he would post online that didn't really align with my values. And I think the values of the establishments that he was a part of, and I'd call him out on it. And subsequently, it made things really uncomfortable for me in my band and for my band members, because there was this hesitance like, oh, why are you saying something? Maybe you shouldn't say something. Maybe we should, but I don't think we should, because we'll probably never be asked to come back and play again.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I did anyways. But I mean, it's really important to point out that dynamic that, like, if you see somebody being hurt in your own community and you notice things that are happening that are really questionable with other young women, you really stand a chance of not being able to accomplish your own goals and being able to express yourself in the venue with the people, with your peers, because this person's opinion of you and other people's view of your relationship with that person is just so key. It's so totally important. That power dynamic was really frustrating and really sickening a lot of the time.
Wow, I did not know anything about that. How about you, Diane?
Yeah, to go back to that whole power thing, Chris Hennen obviously has been one of the most biggest figures in our music scene. So he does hold a lot of power. And so it does make this all a bit more difficult. And I mean, everyone in the music scene knows his name. So a lot of us were affected by that, for sure. And a lot of us were just like, what? And didn't know what to think and just felt disgusted and felt the whole dynamic is just, it has totally rocked us all. And it's made it difficult to work. It's made it difficult to carry on. It's made it difficult to be like, well, knowing we've had this relationship and we've worked together with them for so long. I mean, again, I worked with him for a couple of years at the High Plains Reader. I've considered him a friend. And everyone at the staff at Dempsey's has all been just shocked and feel sad and upset. And it's just a weird feeling looming around the Dempsey staff. We all feel upset. And I mean, obviously the biggest step we took was firing him. A lot of people say, well, we should have fired him, or they should have fired him. I mean, obviously I just got on the staff. They should have fired him once they found out And I mean, to speak for the Dempsey staff, I think, you know, knowing he's been a part of the staff for, you know, 10 years, it does make it a little more difficult because he's just been pretty much part of that family. So, you know, to all of a sudden be like, okay, you're accused, now we got to fire you, does make it a little bit difficult. Because as much as we all feel for his victims and stand for his victims and want to see that they seek some sort of salvation, you know, and we want to do as much as we can. But yeah, there is that sensitivity around the staff and just knowing how long we've worked with him and the impact he has made on the music scene. And yes, and I know how you guys are talking about, like, we have a tendency to praise rapists. We have a tendency to also boost them up because at the same time, it's like we're really, by outing them or whatever, or we're kind of decimating their lives, you know, because it's once you're found guilty.
Decimating their lives. I would disagree with that completely because, first of all, you know, one of the things Anna said was, people said, you know, he'll get what's coming to him. Mm-hmm. I want to state for the record, and let's be very clear, because with a paralegal background and watching how our criminal justice system has worked, there isn't a single man on USA, okay? There's not a single man that can be held to account, that can be properly punished under the law or adequately punished. Not one. The reason for that is that we don't punish people equitably. One person that commits the same crime as another person in another state may get a completely different sentence based on your color, based on your socioeconomic status, especially if you are white and male and you know how to swim, because apparently that's a big important thing. Or if you are an athlete, or if you're a big music promoter. The fact of the matter is most men are not ever adequately punished for rape. And the fact that most men are not adequately punished for rape makes that whole argument that we hope that that man is going to get punished hollow. And it's really cruel, because what we know is that most likely that man is going to get a slap on the wrist. And the person whose life is actually going to be decimated is the rape victim.
Right.
Yeah. And I want to add to that, you know, from a psychological standpoint, I look at outcomes. That's basically what I do all day. And when we want to talk about who's decimated, 94% of women who are raped experience PTSD symptoms during the first 2 weeks following the rape. 30% report PTSD symptoms 9 months after. 33% report contemplating suicide, and 13% attempt suicide. And approximately 70% of rape or sexual assault victims experience moderate to severe distress, and a larger percentage than for any other violent crime. And it just continues to get worse. I mean, they're much more likely to have substance abuse problems. They're much more likely to have issues with their families and friends. 79% of survivors who are victimized by a family member, close friend, or acquaintance experience professional or emotional issues, including moderate to severe distress or increased problems at work or school. 84% of survivors who are victimized by an intimate partner experience professional or emotional issues, including moderate to severe distress or increased problems at school or work. And not to mention the fact that if the person who sexually assaulted them had an STD or an STI, they have much more increased likelihood of contracting that. And it just gets even worse and worse and worse if you look at people who are in more minority groups. Native Americans, greatest risk for sexual violence. Prisoners are at very high risk. Sexual violence in the military goes unreported because there's this culture of violence within the military that says you protect your brothers and sisters in the military at all costs. It's unacceptable. I frankly don't care what happens to a rapist. As long as, I mean, I don't think they should be like taken out and tied to a tree, and they need to be punished equitably and within the scope of a law that is a good law. But, you know, what they did, they probably got like, I don't know, a very small amount of whatever they got, whatever kick they got out of overpowering and assaulting someone who was vulnerable. they got some kick out of that, and that completely destroys the life of that person. And then that person, not to mention the fact that they've been personally violated, their autonomy, their dignity as a human being has been taken away from them by this person, probably that they knew, then they're dragged through the mud on Facebook, in the courts, they are made to account for their behavior, even though they didn't do anything wrong to be assaulted or victimized, mm-hmm. they get dragged through the mud and scrutinized. Every sexual relationship they've ever had, every mm-hmm. relationship they've ever had, every joint they've smoked mm-hmm. is brought into account in the court mm-hmm. setting to figure out if this person who raped them actually did a bad thing.
And deserves to be punished.
Honestly, I don't have any kind of sad feelings for the person who perpetrates mm-mm. this kind of violence. They did a terrible thing. And you know what? Good people do horrible things. Yeah. Bill Cosby, person we all love, serial rapist.
Yeah.
There are countless people that we look up to who have raped someone. Mm-hmm. Someone that you know has most likely raped someone.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the number of male college students who are likely to commit a sexual assault at their time in school, you basically can't meet any man on a college campus and wonder if you know a rapist, because you probably do.
Oh yeah.
So I understand that it's hard for us as people who care about people to process that people that we love can do horrible things.
Right.
But it's not appropriate to allow that processing to just continually victimize people who have already been hurt so terribly and in such a way that they can never fully recover, never fully be the person mm-hmm. that they were before.
And to me, it's almost, and I don't think that a lot of the people in this room would be upset by this, but every time that there is a person of color that is murdered extrajudicially by a cop, and I hear that the cop is taking a leave of absence, paid leave of absence, while they recover from the trauma of murdering a black person. And I hear all of the people talking about how, oh, that poor cop, now they have to live with the murder that they committed. I'm just like, seriously? Are you kidding me right now? That person has had their life devastated, as they should. They just committed a murder, as they should. And why are we so focused on our concern for the rapist, for the murderer? I mean, There has to be a line that we draw as a community. There has to be a line that we draw between our concern for our fellow man and our concern for the victims of violent crimes. If we truly want to stop violent crimes from happening, we have to say, okay, there are things that we need to do for victims. And part of what we need to do for victims, in my humble opinion, is we need to hold people accountable. We need to be unafraid to talk about this stuff. First of all, we need to be unafraid to talk about this stuff and to condemn this behavior. Now, you see all of this in politicians, right? Every time a politician is running for some major office in this country and they do or say something that is abhorrent to the community, or it's found out that they've done something in their past, immediately, not just all the people around them, but all the other politicians are called to condemn their behavior. Make a statement now. Make a statement immediately. Tell that politician that what he did was wrong. Why can't we do that with rape? Why is it so difficult for us to call out our community members and say, stand up for the victims right now. Condemn this rape.
Yeah, I would add the fact that those statistics that you just put off, those are really extremely powerful. And I think that's something to really drill into people, is because they don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. When they don't look at those statistics, and I think that's definitely something that we could do more of, is just be like, this is what happens to the victims, rather than kind of seeing, oh, the life of the rapist is over. Mm-hmm. I mean, in some way, yeah, it is. It, you know, Chris Hennin lost his job. But yeah, when you spout off those statistics, it really does speak volumes. And And that's something that we need to educate other people about.
Absolutely.
I think hugely.
And I think, and that's one thing that I really wanted to touch on today was rape culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means, and especially how it pertains to what you just said, Cindy. And why we need those statistics, why we even need those to drive something home, why we can't just understand that this is an inherent truth, is that rape culture is a culture that that demonizes or makes the victim look bad while normalizing male sexual assaulters and rapists. It's a culture where we tend to not focus on the pain of the victim, where we make excuses for the sexual assaulter, where it's easy for us to make jokes about rape without considering how a victim or even a woman might feel, or somebody that is affected by sexual assault. Some phrases that we might use that normalize rape. These kinds of things, this sort of attitude, this culture of cool, that it's cool to say things that are offensive, like comedians that make jokes about rape.
Or prison rape,
any form of rape or sexual assault, or even misogyny in general, anything that.
Or even, you know, like when men say to a woman, and I've heard this a lot, they'll say, no one would rape you, you're too ugly.
Yeah, that happened to me yesterday, actually, when I was online.
It's supposed to be meant as a form of, you know, a backwards compliment, because someone worthy of rape is pretty.
Thank you.
And what in the hell is that about?
So that's something that occurs frequently. And I bring this up because I think that this idea of rape being acceptable, of us not focusing on the perpetrator, is really kind of ingrained in this downtown culture, like that men can make these sorts of jokes, and that women are often complicit to it by being quiet or by saying, oh, this person's cool, they can say that, they're just joking. It's not cool, because what we're doing is we're like Darcy said, allowing it to perpetuate. And I know that this is true about Dempsey's and the Aquarium, and has been in the past, which is why I'm excited that we're having this conversation today, because I see this as an important step forward. Like, even when I've been in that bar in the past, just walking through, this happened a year ago, just walking from the back of Dempsey's to the front after having a cigarette, some guy, no idea who he was, just reached down and grabbed my crotch. Somebody saw it happen. They looked at me and they looked at him and they did nothing. And I froze, and I couldn't move. And the guy just kind of looked at his friends and started talking to each other again. And I just kept on going through.
And by the way, for our listeners, that is sexual assault.
That is sexual assault. And that's the kind of thing that is something that is sort of acceptable in that bar.
Oh, it's totally acceptable.
I've seen so many things. One time I walked out, I was wearing a really small dress. It was a really short dress, and some guy kind of out back where we were smoking yelled at me, "Nice dress, I'd like to take it off of you." But and of course, you know, everybody is kind of laughing at that sort of thing, and those are things that have happened to me. I've seen things like that happen to women at that bar all of the time, and mm-hmm. I've seen women participate in it too and think it's funny. So it's not as if I want to say this is only a male problem. This is also a problem for the female apologists of this sort of behavior.
And we have to acknowledge that this kind of culture lives everywhere.
Everywhere, absolutely. I mean, just this bar.
As I'm seeing, you know, all of the violence that's going on, we're seeing all of this violence erupt across the country because there's another dead person, because there's another black person that's been murdered. And when I see this, and we are coming to a point in this country where people are saying, okay, we need to stop and admit something here. Black people are getting murdered by cops indiscriminately all the time. Mm-hmm. We can't sit in the sidelines anymore and go, but not all cops, but there are some good cops. We need to get rid of the bad apples. We need to talk about the fact that we have a huge problem.
Right.
The same is true of rape culture in our community. We have to stop saying, well, it was just one isolated incident. It's just one problem. It's just here. It's just there. It's everywhere.
And the thing is, though, it's not just an isolated problem, especially at Dempsey's. And I'm not trying to, like, call out Dempsey's. Well, actually, no, I am trying to call out Dempsey's because there is a culture of violence at that bar. Mm-hmm. Literally, in the news, like, week after week when I moved here, Dempsey's was in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Property Brothers aren't even immune to being, like, manhandled by the staff of that bar. Mm-hmm. I had a lesbian couple approach me. They just moved to Fargo-Moorhead. Mm-hmm. They approached me because they were roughhoused in that bar by members of staff. And when I called to talk to the manager, he accused them of lying. Wow. And he said, none of my staff would lie to me. And I'm like, I've been a manager. I know that staff lie, even people you've worked with for a long time. And I said, can you get anybody to verify your story that's not employed by you? Silence at the other end. Very uncooperative with me about trying to understand what happened. They reported to me that one of the partners was thrown out of the bathroom because she looked very masculine. They claimed it was because someone was getting sick in the bathroom. I'm not going to, like, go into all the details. I frankly don't care what the policy is about that. What I care about is the fact that the concern that we had was completely blown off. We went to local media about it. They were going to do stories, and then they didn't do stories. Wow. And I wonder if it's because there was something better on. There wasn't, because I looked. I'm wondering who told them not to run that story. Wow. And so that couple, long story short, moved away from Fargo. Wow. They lived here a total of 25 days. They left Fargo over that incident. Wow. And this is the bar that has the reputation of being LGBTQ friendly. I refuse to go there. I refuse to go to Verse because it's also owned by the same people. I refuse to patronize that company completely because of how the flagrant disregard of my concerns as an advocate. Mm-hmm. That speaks volumes. There are other businesses downtown that have very similar things. There's a restaurant downtown. I won't name names. I'm sure you've all been there. Their bathroom, the male bathroom, is Willy, which is a British slang term for penis, and their female bathroom is No Willy. That, in and of itself, is offensive.
Wow. I don't know what restaurant you're talking about. I'd like to know now.
They serve pizza. They should narrow it down. They do serve pizza.
I think I know which one it is now.
I love that restaurant. I won't go there. It offended me. I was so embarrassed. I took clients there who I was advocating for and saw that. And I felt so embarrassed because I had no idea. That is a violent, it's not like what you would consider like serious violence, but that is emotionally violent. It sends a message. Now, when I went to the bathroom in the No Willy bathroom, I left the seat up because I'm like, that was my, like, act of resistance. It's like, I'm going to take the extra effort to put the seat up because I'm sending the message that this is stupid.
Yes.
But, so that is, that's a little off topic.
And we have, I don't think it is because we have a right. You have a right as a woman to demand that the places that you go keep you safe. The places that you're patronizing make you feel safe. And welcome. Am I wrong here? Does anybody disagree
with
that?
Totally, yeah. That's the only reason I'll agree to go.
Sadly, as women, we are forced to go places that refuse to even acknowledge our concerns of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been so normalized that we just have to accept that. Hey, don't want to get raped? Don't go out. Why'd you go out alone? Why'd you wear that skirt? Why were you drinking?
Why are you transgender?
Yeah. Right.
You know, why do you have to use the bathroom? Why can't you just use the one that's on your birth certificate? Well, because I have breasts, which I've said on air once. I'll say it again. Like, you know, I don't want to be victimized when I use the bathroom. Right. I don't want to be victimized when I go out with friends to get drinks. I'm scared to go to bars, frankly. There are a very few places that I'll go in Fargo because I'm frankly, by myself, I'll go with a group of people.
But you should be able to feel safe.
When I won't go downtown, that's the reality. I'll go to a corporate own places, because I know that there is a process by which I can get some form of restitution, and mm-hmm. I have done so. But I've found when you work with these small businesses, they just blackball you because they don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And that's not okay.
So, and Diane, that's mm-hmm. why I'm like so glad to continue the discussion here, because I think that this would be the next step toward getting away from that feeling where we all can feel like we are welcome and safe at your establishment, because that's what we want. Usually, definitely. Yeah. So in order to do that, and we kind of touched on this already. So, I mean, I know you're with me on this. It's important that we have some sort of statement from your establishment that says that you don't tolerate that kind of behavior from your staff. And then also, it would be good to not tolerate that sort of behavior from your patrons to your clients. Just because, I mean, you've got good people that want to be there,
yes.
and want to have a good time. And I think that we've paid to feel safe there, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. I can speak on behalf of all of Dempsey staff in saying that we absolutely want this to be a safe place to be at. And I'm so glad to be here. I'm so glad y'all invited me. Because I think this is a really important conversation. Y'all have touched on amazing points that a lot of people are completely unaware of, and that they don't see it that way. They see it as, you know, as pointing fingers, as an attack, and they just completely just overlook it and just move on. Because again, Dempsey's, and I can attest it too. Like I love Dempsey's. I love the aquarium. It's a home for me, mm-hmm. and I love the staff there. Mm-hmm. But do I believe everything you guys have said? Absolutely, absolutely. And do I want to see improvements? Absolutely. And I mean, being the head of the aquarium now, I think I will have some sort of power over that. And you know, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we keep progressing forward and makes it feel like a safe space. I think it helps that it's, you know,
yeah,
and having somebody that we know that you yeah. know, you know, someone yeah. there mm-hmm. is on your side and has spoken out and said, yeah. I want you to feel safe. Women out there,
usually.
If you're listening, yes. if you're listening, Diane Miller yeah. wants you to feel safe yes. at Dempsey's, and if you don't, you can address it with her.
Please.
Because she's going to make sure that it gets addressed.
And we really appreciate that for sure.
So.
And also, mm-hmm. I just want to make it absolutely clear. I mean, there had been what you were saying earlier about it being really hard
yep.
to just fire Chris.
Yep.
And of course, I do want to point out that we are aware that you came in after the fact and this wasn't part of your decision making. But speaking mm-hmm. for your organization, mm-hmm. there was kind of a lapse in time. And we do understand, of course, based on what you said, that it was difficult for them, but
yes.
I it would make me and so many other ones, because I personally am also a survivor twice over of
sure.
rape,
right.
That we hear from you that the delay was probably or was definitely not right, that it was inappropriate for that delay to be there, and that it should have been acted on a little quicker.
I would agree with you completely.
Okay,
and
good.
And I can empathize with where they're coming from because they're uneducated about it. But I do. I think taking and right away seeing when a victim comes out like that, absolutely believe them. If a victim of rape comes out and says this person raped me, I believe them first.
Right.
Yeah. I do. Yeah,
I think that mm-hmm. you know, it's difficult for us to begin to address this and to come at it hard and to come at it with a zero tolerance and standing completely with the victims and standing completely with women and saying no more, because you're right, Diane. Mm-hmm. There isn't a level of education about this. We haven't talked about it. The first step to solving a problem is admitting there is a problem.
Absolutely.
And that isn't something we have done as a community ever, ever. I was sitting here doing a show about rape culture last year. I was sitting here talking about how a person got raped at my child's university and they got 1 year probation. 1 year probation for rape, which he admitted to. And I have to send my child there. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, when do we get to start talking about this? When do we start saying, okay, from now on, if this happens, we're all going to respond differently. And what's hard about that is because we are taking a stand right now. The women in this room are taking a stand right now. We're going to have to call out some people which fumbled it, which biffed it, including my brother's newspaper. I don't feel any pride in acknowledging that we are slow to react in this community to the violence of rape culture, but we do have to admit that we have that problem. Even if it makes us feel bad, maybe we should sit with that bad feeling and think about how horrible the victims feel when we fail to act on their behalf. How much trauma is impacting them on a daily level, and that is growing and growing as our silence continues to, you know, ignore them, because silence is violence.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. I want to take a moment to really acknowledge the two women that came forward. What they did was so hard, and it undoubtedly changed their lives forever, as if things weren't bad enough.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Having their bodies taken from them. Their bravery likely prevented other women from being raped and sexually assaulted. So I just want to give some recognition there for a minute.
That is
really
important.
Admire them, and they are pretty much my heroes.
Yeah, and you know, it can't be emphasized enough the fact that those women are your heroes, and those women are brave, and those women are incredibly so. Not because they found the courage in this horrible situation to speak, but because they did so knowing that the likely outcome was going to be worse for them, not so worse for the rapist, that they would destroy their lives in the process, and that they would do so to try to keep another woman from going through the same thing. That's why they do it.
Yep.
If any of you sitting around this table right now have been raped, and I know several of us have because we've spoken about it on this show, you know why you spoke out. You know why you said something. It wasn't because the rapist was going to get punished like you thought they should. It was because you didn't want another woman to suffer the same thing you just went through, and that you're feeling like you want to kill yourself over. So that is why we have to acknowledge the victims of this rape. That is why they are so great. But it shouldn't be like that. We shouldn't leave our victims of sexual violence out there to hang and dry in the wind by themselves. We should be able to acknowledge that what they are doing is brave, and that we shouldn't put them through that hell. That there should be a way for women, even though there isn't a judicial justice that we can hope for in the present, as a community, we can make them feel supported. We can make them feel that we are going to try to make our community safe, that we're going to make a response where the judicial system fails to give them what they need. And that's what we're trying to do today on this show.
I agree wholeheartedly that the first thing that we have to do is admit that we have a problem. We have a problem. And we've established that we have a problem. Whether or not people buy it, I mean, that's completely on you, listeners. Like, for you to listen to what we're saying and take it to heart. But the second step, and this is the most, I think, the more important step. The first step is essential, but this next step is the most important, is we have to educate ourselves on how we can prevent this from happening again. Mm-hmm. Because passion alone doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Passion plus direction gives us the outcome that we want. We have to educate ourselves. Coming together as a company and saying, we don't want people to feel unsafe, is admirable. That's passion. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do it?
We need to create a culture of consent. Okay. We need to start talking about consent.
Let's talk about, why don't you take it? Because this is your wheelhouse.
Well, I mean, it's one of my lesser wheelhouses. I think that the change, and this is sort of how I kind of orient my life. Change only happens when people want it to happen. You can pass laws, you can create policies, but they're not going to change what's going on unless people themselves feel passionately about it. So honestly, I think that the first step is to look around you for opportunities to educate yourself about sexual assault and consent. Mm-hmm. Consent, and in my definition of consent, and this is my own process, I have a 3-part process of consent whenever I want to engage in some kind of physical relationship with a person. I ask them 3 times, do you want to have sex with me? They must say yes 3 times in order for me to know that it's okay. If someone doesn't say yes, the answer is no. It's not that they haven't said no, because the first time I was sexually assaulted, I didn't say no. I didn't say anything. I didn't want it to happen, but I was afraid to say no. If they haven't said yes to you, then they've said no. Along with that, if someone is drunk, their answer is no. It doesn't matter what's coming out of their mouth, their answer is no. If you are drunk, you can't give consent. Period. You cannot make an informed mm-hmm. decision about what is about to happen to you. Mm-hmm. If they don't say yes in a sober fashion, in my opinion, 3 times, but it's up to you. As long as you get the 1 yes, for most people, that's enough. Then you don't have consent.
But it should be said that I can say yes, and we can be making out, and then all of a sudden I can go, no.
Nope.
This I don't want.
Yep.
I don't want this touch. I don't like this touch. You got to stop now.
It's not a contract.
It's not a contract.
Consent is not a contract. It can be withdrawn at any point.
Right. So if I say yes on Wednesday, but Thursday I'm feeling no, you can't just rape me because I said yes on Wednesday.
And by the way, this also includes if you're dating someone. Mm-hmm. Dating someone is not automatic consent.
That's
if
right.
If your partner's like, I'm not feeling it, and then you pressure them into having sex...
That's not consent. That's a violation. That's a violation of consent. And contrary to what Donald Trump believes,
you can
rape your wife.
Yeah.
You can rape your wife. Your wife is not yours. You do not own your wife if she doesn't want to have sex and you force her to. You're raping her. That is not consent. And we need to understand what that is, because men have a hard time with understanding consent. Mm-hmm. They find it very difficult to engage us as women sexually. And so the complication of having to get consent is something that many men just don't want to deal with.
One of my favorite examples of this very concept is I was on the Tinders. I do not do the Tinders or the OkCupids of this world. Ain't nobody got time for all that drama. But when I first moved here, I did, because I wanted some, okay? Can mm-hmm. I just say that? Can I just say that? Women yeah. have needs, okay?
Yes.
And one of the first messages I got was, I want to tear your ass up. And I'm like, no. Why would you lead with that? Like, I don't even know if I would ever go with that exact expression ever, because that doesn't sound very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, yeah, tearing why? Indicates violence there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. It's supposed to be a pleasurable experience where we're both enjoying and benefiting from the experience. Not yeah. where one of us is writhing in pain while the other person is like yeah. doing
some a people are into that kinky stuff and they just go for it.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean that there has to be that consent there
consent,
as well.
Yeah.
But it's like I don't know why you would lead with, you know, I want to basically do a synchronized Olympic dive on you.
Right.
Like I just don't think that's what I want. Thank you yeah. very much. But, you know, I think that idea of, like, really, you know, I don't want men to be listening to this and think, oh, we think you're stupid because you don't know how to consent. You don't know how to consent because of rape culture.
Right.
Because that rape culture affects you just as much as it affects women.
Mm-hmm.
Misogyny affects men just as much as it affects women. It is toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Rape culture is toxic. It affects men, too. Men don't know how to have good relationships with women because they've been told their entire lives, and it's a story that has been passed down from generation upon generation upon generation from the first person who told it, that women are your property and mm-hmm. you can do whatever you want with them. Mm-hmm. So if they're your property, why would you consent? Mm-hmm. Like, it makes perfect sense, right? If you think women are property, then why do you need consent?
You don't need consent.
But the thing is, women are not property.
Right. And we tell little girls this, and I know you all heard it. I heard it. When you were being picked on by some boy in school, he was pulling your hair, when he was dogging you, somebody said, oh, he just likes you and he doesn't know how to show it. Aww. Right?
Yeah.
We've all heard that. We need to stop telling our children this nonsense.
Or boys will be boys.
That too. That's nonsense. That is a pass that allows violence to be perpetrated on women for the sake of, because boys do stuff, because they should be allowed to do that stuff. And then we're also telling our young ladies that we are supposed to accept violence as a form of love. That's okay, because that's how boys show their love for you. They beat you up. They pull your hair. They make fun of you. And that's supposed to be how we're supposed to feel, that they're loving us. That is some crazy messed up stuff. And we're taught this since we're little. Mm-hmm. Little kids.
And the reality is, love is the complete opposite of that. It's when two people sincerely want the best for one another. And sex should be an expression of that desire to be that intimate with a person that you are literally, in that moment, one person, you know, mm-hmm. fused together. And, you know, some kind of emotional and physical bond. And if you're in a relationship where that isn't the case, where you're being pressured into doing what you're doing, where you're being abused in some way, that's not okay. And I think it's an important part of education, and that's why I'm gonna do this now, is knowing how to get help. Mm-hmm. And if you or someone you care about has been affected by personal violence, you should contact the Rape and Abuse Crisis Center here in Fargo. The number is 1-800-344-7273. All services are free of charge and confidential as defined by law. If you're listening to us through Shoutcast or our website, kpppfm.com, you can call 1-800-799-7233 for help with domestic violence, or 1-800-394-255 for help with sexual assault. Either number will refer you to someone in our area or in your area who can help you.
Can you read that second number again? I only heard...
Yes. So if you don't live in... So if you are listening to us through Shoutcast or our website, kpppfm.com, then you can find resources by calling 1-800-799-7233 for help with domestic violence, or 1-800-394-2255 for help with sexual assault. Either number will refer you to someone in your area who can help you.
That's fantastic. And that's a start. We are starting a conversation today that needed to be started in this community about rape culture. I hope that we can continue this conversation in the future. I don't want to start a conversation that we never have again. As women, I think that once we start a leadership role in trying to change the tide, trying to make people more aware, trying to educate people in the community, we need to leave that door open, and we need to continue to have those conversations. So I thank all of you here today. I would like for us to make plans to do this again, maybe in a month from now, maybe invite some other women, maybe invite other people to call in, or we call them, so we can have discussions with other women, because we need to continue to expose the ways in which we are failing our victims of sexual violence in this community and in this country. We need to try to figure out a way to be more proactive in how we address these things. And I'd like to leave the floor open now to the rest of you for the last 5 minutes of our show to see what kinds of things you want to do in the future. I don't know if you guys have any other actions that you'd like to take. Annie, you want to start?
Yeah. I think that mostly the actions that I want to take are going to be just part of my daily life. When, especially through social media, interactions with my peers, my friends, my family, to call it out when you see it. You are going to get some flack for it. You will lose some friends over it. And that's really hard. That's just terrible. But eventually you're going to develop some self-respect as a result. And you are helping out a lot of people by doing that. You're slowly changing the world. I do have this petition up now. Diane, I want to say that I thank you so much for having the courage to do this and for doing it, because I know this was not easy for you. But we really appreciate everything that you are doing and going to do to
all women
to
help. Out yes. there that are listening are probably absolutely. Thanking you.
We really, really thank you.
Thank you for that leadership.
So as a result here, I'm going to be removing Burton Klaus Meyer's name from the petition online. And will no longer be doing my little boycott. And of course, anybody else protesting, I would encourage you to embrace the organization again. And of course, that doesn't mean that they're excused from anything. We definitely hope that you will continue to call it out as you see it. Yep. And in the meantime, I still will be pressing for some sort of statement, which, as you can see, it's not that hard. It's very easy. It's great. It feels good to do.
Yep.
To John Strand, and who's an owner of High Plains Reader, and also on the city commission, I believe, right? Yeah. And then Raul Gomez, also, who is another co-owner, to just make a simple statement like Diane Miller here did. Thank you.
Diane.
Well, once again, thank you all for inviting me and being open to having me on the show, of course. I really value this time that we shared together. I mean, for sure, this conversation shouldn't stop here. Absolutely. The biggest thing for me is the statistics showing and just having conversation about that. And then as far as Dempsey staff, again, I want to reiterate that we do find it so important to make sure it's a safe space, because it is a great bar and it is a beloved bar and things do happen there. But for the most part, you should feel safe when you go there and know that you're among good people. Mm-hmm. And that I know for a fact that a lot of the staff there don't tolerate that kind of stuff. And even upstairs, if I see anything like that, I will immediately take action. And because, I mean, yeah, I love my job that I just got, and I want to see the music scene thrive. I want to see the community thrive, and the one way to make the community thrive is that people feel safe where they are and protected and can have a good time without feeling like, you know,
bad things can happen.
Yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Thank you for taking that step. I really appreciate that. How about you, Darcy?
I'd like to continue this conversation. I would love to see this become a monthly thing. One of the things that I feel very passionately about that I think we ought to talk about as women is the upcoming election.
Mm-hmm.
And
yay.
How a lot is at stake for LGBTQ people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot is at stake for people of color.
Mm-hmm.
A lot is at stake for women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We need to talk about this because the election is coming up. And if things do not go the way that we hope they will, it's going to be really hard to be a queer person. It's going to be hard to be a person of color. I mean, it's already hard to be a queer person and a person of color. It's going to get exponentially harder.
Yeah.
And it's going to get even more difficult to be a woman. And I think we ought to talk about it, because mm-hmm. the fact that we're not is one of the reasons why we have the problems that we have, is because we just don't want to talk about it. And we need to. So that's something I'd like to see.
Yep. And you know what? You know what I just realized? Hmm. When you get a bunch of really strong leadership-minded women around a table, we can do anything.
Totally.
Thank you for listening to this important program about rape culture on 88.1 KPPPLP, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Thanks for listening.